This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Maryland Governor Roy Moore says there is no threat to drinking water amid a 2,000-gallon oil spill in Baltimore Harbor. Mayor Brandon Scott reiterating that moments ago.
We can smell gas. Obviously, you can smell that gas. And we can see the oil on the water. But we know people are understandably concerned. But again, as you just heard, there is no impact to drinking water.
More than 100 people have been working to help contain the spill all night long. President Trump signing a proclamation banning people from a dozen states from entering the U.S. He is also moving to ban international students enrolled at Harvard University from entering the country. And he's having his attorney general look into whether former President Biden's aides disguised any cognitive declines, he says, during his presidency. The bodies of two Israeli-Americans, a couple in their 70s who were killed on October 7th, have been recovered from Khan Yunis more than 2.5 years after the attacks. This is ABC News.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. Nearly two dozen theater hopefuls showed up to sing a song and read for the roles for the Community Players production of Little Shop of Horrors. Little Shop of Horrors is a horror comedy rock musical about a floor shop worker who raises a plant that eats human flesh and blood. The show was made into a 1986 movie that starred Rick Moranis and Steve Martin and was directed by Frank Oz. After 3 days of tryouts and another day of callbacks, director Cameron Cormican made his choices. The cast will include Dave Van Halgren as Seymour, Faith Morga as Audrey, Glenn Dunn as Mr. Mushnick, Matt Rowe as Oren Scavillo, Maggie Keller as Ronette, Kate Stoda as Crystal, Cassidy Mancilla-Young as Chiffon, and Michael Ames as the voice of Plant Audrey II. Additional roles will be filled by Chloe Hine, Ryan Whitman, Leo Murr, and Elise Staffslin. There are still plenty of opportunities backstage for anyone who would like to get involved. People who can do simple carpentry to help build the set, along with painters, prop makers, or stagehands are needed. Everyone is welcome and anyone can get involved. For questions or more information, email communityplayerssswi@gmail.com or call the show's director, Cameron Cormican, at 608-844-1245. Performances of The Little Shop of Horrors are scheduled for July 25th, 26th, 27th, and August 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at the Richland Center High School Auditorium. Tickets priced at $15 for adults, $10 for children under 18, and $50 for a family package of two adults and any number of children will be available at the door. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
The Brewers are back home. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers have the day off before opening a weekend series tomorrow night in Milwaukee against the San Diego Padres. The Brewers beating the Reds yesterday 9-1 at Great American Ballpark thanks to home runs from Jackson Churio, Isaac Collins, and Daz Cameron, whose father Mike played for the crew in 2009. What has Daz learned from his dad?
Stay within the moment and understand that there are going to be times where we're going to win. Sometimes we're going to lose and just continue to, you know, be prepared.
NFL, the Packers center Elgton Jenkins has been holding out for a new contract. What about Zach Tom, the starting right tackle? Asked why he's reported to OTAs.
I don't really think it'll do me any good to sit out. You know, I'm trying not to worry about the contract situation. I'm just trying to do what's best for the team. And being here with the guys, I think that's worth a lot more than the contract situation will take care of itself.
That's Packers right tackle Zach Tom with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Sunny this morning, becoming partly cloudy this afternoon. Our high today in the upper 70s to near 80. Tonight, mostly cloudy. We'll drop into the mid to upper 50s. Tomorrow, scattered showers or a thunderstorm with a high in the mid to upper 70s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 50.
We are the keepers of the wild. For more than 80 years, we've been committed to conserving the natural landscapes that define our nation. nothing is more important than maintaining wild spaces for adventurers to explore and wildlife to thrive. We are America's hunters and target shooters. Together with firearm, ammunition, and archery manufacturers, we've supported the conservation of more than 36 million acres of American wildlands. For more information, visit OutdoorStewards.org.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Lily Roberts, she is from the Center for American Progress Action Fund.
They're trying to pretend that this bill would be good for the working class because of this really small carve-out to our tax laws. The no tax on tips piece does not at all even come close to addressing the problem of wages in this country. You know, a third of workers who work for tips in the first place don't make enough money to pay taxes at all.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons, 4 until 6 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
President Trump is unhappy with the organization that helped him pick his Supreme Court justices. Jim Santel will be here to break that down. We'll lighten it up in hour number two with some weather and wine with Brittany Merlot. Don't miss it.
Mattenair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, welcome back. It is 7:06 now. Welcome back up north on this Thursday morning, June 5th. Nice to have you along here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We will be talking to Congressman Mark Pocan a little bit later on this hour, talking about the big bloated boondoggle of Donald Trump and House Republicans, some of whom are now expressing remorse, saying they didn't know exactly what was in the bill that they were voting for, which is what happens when you don't actually want to follow the usual process of passing a bill the way we all learned on Schoolhouse Rock, which includes talking to one another, reading the bill, things like that. So we'll talk to the good congressman about that coming up in just a bit. And then later on, we will talk to Chad Holmes from 98.9 WXCO to see what he's covering up in the Wausau area. Sean O'Malley will be here to talk about money and markets, especially the newest Trump tariff out there, tariffs on aluminum and on imported beer. And, of course, the aluminum goes into cans, and so even if you're a domestic beer drinker, if you're a beer drinker, Donald Trump just jacked up your prices, and it's going to do so much more damage to people who work in industries that rely on, you know, food and beverages than anything it might do for, you know, U.S. steel and aluminum production. But that's what we're living in right now. Let's see, we've got Brittany Merlot off today. We hope to have her back tomorrow because she would be the first one to wish Rob from Tigerton a happy birthday. So Parker Olson and I will have to do it instead. Rob, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Rob.
He says that in Tigerton, it is sunny and 50 degrees. He says, today is my birthday, and I've got lawns to mow today. Yesterday I did 4 yards. I mowed 12 lawns total. And he said he also wanted to mention that last night was the 49th anniversary of the greatest game in NBA Finals history when the Boston Celtics defeated the Phoenix Suns 128-126 in triple overtime to take a 3-2 lead in the NBA Finals. And let's see, a few days later, I always remember Guard Heard from Phoenix hitting a buzzer beater at the end of the second overtime, and he says thank you very much for the birthday wishes. So, and look at that, Tony wishing a happy birthday to Rob on YouTube as well. So we're just turning this into a one big Rob birthday party.
Yeah, he's a celebrity. We got to celebrate. Yeah,
I know, as it should be. I suppose we could give people a chance to win some stuff. What do you think?
That's a good idea. I like winning stuff.
Okay, well, I'm all in favor of stuff as well. So that takes us to the Scani Summer Text to Win contest done statewide across the network 4 times a day. Each day or each one of these hourly contests 4 times during the day, you can win either $100 cash or a pair of Brewers tickets, nice club-level tickets. And he said, let's see, we've got each entry puts you in the drawing for one of the grand prizes, which includes a Wisconsin Dells getaway or a Door County getaway with some gas money to get you there. Each time we do this, there's a different keyword that you need to text us through the Civic Media app before the end of the hour. So if you don't have the app downloaded in the usual places, Apple, Google, go to one of the stations on the app, okay? And then we give you the keyword and you text that puppy in and you are in the running for a prize. He said, scrolling down to see what is today's prize. Today's prize is a pair of Brewers tickets this hour if you text this keyword before the end of the hour. Road, R-O-A-D. Text Road through the Civic Media app to one of the stations on that app by the end of the hour. You're in the running for a pair of Brewers tickets. And again, you will also be entered into the drawing for one of the grand prizes, a Wisconsin Dells area getaway or a Door County getaway. If you want to see the complete contest rules, head over to the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. And again, you will have new chances to play with new keywords at 11 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. So there you go. The Scani Summer Text to Win contest. The keyword is road, R-O-A-D. Text that to us by the end of an hour, and we could make you the winner of Brewers tickets and maybe a big grand prize drawing as well. So we will be talking to the congressman in just a sec here about what's happening in D.C. with the big bloated boondoggle that President Trump is trying to pass. And if you missed it last hour, we talked a bit about the developments closer to home where, again, Republicans are just trying to ram through whatever they want without having to actually negotiate. But before I give you the update on what's happening in Madison, I want to say with great happiness that the story I'm reading from here in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is from Jesse O'Point. And it is just wonderful to see her name there again. She'd been out with a health concern for quite some time and put up a post yesterday about being back and thanking people for expressing their concern. And I have definitely missed her writing there. And it's great to see her back writing for the Journal Sentinel. And it's where I again make that pitch to you that it's great to have free stuff. All right, TV, local radio, Up North News. We've never had a paywall. We never will have a paywall. Other places that do have a paywall and are worth subscribing to, you should subscribe to. And you should do that for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, if only for Jesse O'Point and Molly Beck and the rest of the politics team that writes articles. So having said that and welcome Jesse back, she's the one that wrote the article for them about how months of budget negotiations have fallen apart. Republicans walked away from the negotiating table, and it was pretty easy to see this coming because, again, we've got Republicans both in D.C. and in Madison who are looking to get everything that they want and will do everything possible not to allow their enemy, as they see Democrats, to get any kind of a win. If you'll recall in the last budget, Republicans wanted a great big tax cut for the highest brackets, and Governor Evers, of course, vetoed it. And eventually he signed a budget with some partial vetoes that did include some tax cuts, and he took some of the credit for it because that's what a governor gets to do. You sign the bill or you send it back to the legislature. Whether Republicans liked it or not, he's part of the process. If he weren't part of the process, they would have written it in an entirely different way. But that so incensed Republicans. Oh, my goodness. For 2 years now, they have just been tangled up in knots in anger that Governor Evers would take any credit for a tax cut that's in there, even though he's actually been pushing for years for a better tax cut than anything they proposed. Not bigger than what they proposed, but that's because, again, theirs would have gone to the very rich. The governor's would have gone to the middle class. So this time around, with a $4 billion surplus, I again say for emphasis, a $4 billion surplus. Why does he always say that for emphasis? Because as a legislator, at the start of the Great Recession, we had to deal with a $6 billion shortfall. So I look at these guys with their $4 billion surplus, and they can't figure out a way to pass a budget in record time that makes everybody happy. It is either hubris or laziness or arrogance to the hilt with these Senate and Assembly Republicans, and now they're walking away after months of negotiations, even after Governor Evers agreed to much of their tax cut plan. Because you see, because of their anger about the governor taking credit last time around, they were demanding that they take care of the tax cut part first before they take care of the spending side. They wanted to make sure that their fingerprints were all over any kind of a tax cut. Okay, the governor said, let's talk. And they did. And they, according to the governor, you know, did reach consensus. He was willing to compromise on their tax cut plans. Evers' statement says the concept of compromise is simple. Everyone gets something they want and no one gets everything they want. He said he had agreed to support the Republicans' half of the deal and their top tax priorities, while Republicans could not reach consensus within their caucus to back Evers' proposals. In other words, there was no negotiation. There was no compromise. There was, well, okay, thanks for inviting us to talk. We got what we wanted. Now give us what we want. You know, we're not going to take anything that you want, or at least come to any kind of a level that is remotely responsible. Because keep in mind, let's just talk about schools for a second. Public schools in Wisconsin have been underfunded compared to the rate of inflation for 16 consecutive years. And so then you see reaction, like, for example, the Assembly Majority Leader, Tyler August, had put up a tweet, something like, he was mocking the fact that schools and universities were needing, you know, at least $1 billion in new money. And again, he was mocking it with the hashtag not going to happen, hashtag tone deaf. No, Representative August, tone deaf is underfunding public schools for 16 consecutive years to the rate of inflation. So, yeah, no wonder the need for proper state investment is so high. And yet, you didn't have to give the governor everything that he wants. You didn't have to give schools everything that they want. You didn't have to give parents who are desperate for affordable child care everything they want. You didn't have to give away everything on your position. But the fact that with a $4 billion surplus, you couldn't even come close to a win-win on investing in schools, on investing in childcare, on investing in healthcare, and continuing to make sure that broadband internet connections expand throughout parts of Wisconsin, that you couldn't take care of getting PFAS out of our water, that you couldn't take care of our farmers who are looking for new markets at a time when their president is trying to put them out of business with this trade war. There's no victory lap for you to take walking away from the negotiating table. If you talked honestly to your constituents, honestly, they would say, compromise, reach agreement, find a win-win, stop wasting time. But they don't do it that way. And one of our listeners had a good way of putting this. I've seen it all the time. Here's Cassandra writing on YouTube. I got a survey from Representative Dave Murphy, and the way he asked the questions was so partisan. So, of course, people are going to answer the way he expects or wants, and then he'll take it back and say, see, this is what the people actually think. Yeah, there's something to be said for the surveys that lawmakers put out. They're not surveys, all right? They're PR pieces. If you have a point of view of what you want your legislator to do, whether it's specific or general, then reach out to them. Go to their town hall, if they have the guts to do a town hall, and tell them about the investments that they should make while keeping taxes affordable. Again, how about cutting taxes for the middle class? That would be a help. But in walking away from the table, it only extends the process, and it extends the division, and it extends the negativity, and that's been the Republican legislators' playbook all along. A little sports at 7:19. The Brewers took 2 out of 3 from the Cincinnati Reds. Isaac Collins belted the 3-run homer for the Brewers. Jackson Churio and Daz Cameron each hit 2-run shots. The Brewers have won now their 12th consecutive series against the Reds, with a 9-1 victory. They are now off today as they head home for a long homestand. They will open up a weekend homestand against San Diego. Coverage beginning at 6:35 tomorrow on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We've been revisiting election denial hotspots this week, 5 years after the 2020 election. Monday, June 9th, a civil trial begins against MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell, accused of defaming former Dominion Voting Systems election security expert Dr. Eric Coomer. Coomer, former director of product strategy and security for Dominion, found himself accused in a conspiracy theory claiming Coomer admitted rigging the election and his life was threatened. Broadcasters, podcasters, Lindell, and others allegedly repeated the claim, resulting in Coomer bringing 5 suits, 2 in Denver District Court and 3 in Federal District Court. 2 defendants, far-right broadcasters OAN and Newsmax, settled their cases with Coomer. Others tried to use Colorado statute giving courts the power to dismiss meritless defamation cases where defendants prove they are exercising free speech. So far, the courts have found for Coomer, and his cases were allowed to go forward. Lindell told The Bulwark that he would be taking the stand in his defense. The witness list also reportedly includes former Mesa County, Colorado clerk Tina Peters, convicted of giving unauthorized access to the county's Dominion ballot tabulators to investigators tied to Lindell. Lindell told a D.C. federal court in April he could not afford the judgment in the case he lost to voting systems company Smartmatic. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Timeout.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Is getting vaccinated on your to-do list? We can help you check that off.
You've got this.
Yes, you do. See how we've got you at yougotthis.usaging.org. A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WRCE. I'm Bo Hendricks, and here's what's going on in Richland Center this morning.
On this part of the morning show today, we welcome back Mike Brenninger to the studio. Local pastor, community leader, author. You've been filling up the resume.
busy
guy. But we're back to talk about the book, the handbook for community change called Pulling Together, which Mike was on with us a while back. But you're really starting to kind of put things into motion right now with the book. And you have a launch coming up in the community very soon, Mike.
Yes. So Tom Moskaller from Madison and I wrote this book, Pulling Together, a handbook for community change. It took us 3 years to put this book together. We actually had a team that worked with us. But, you know, the more people you've got, kind of the slower things go. So 3 years in the making, but we finally got it launched in 2025. And I was on a couple months ago and talked about it a little bit. So just a little update since then, we've done several book launch events as well as some workshops. So we were, Tom lives in Verona. He's been in Madison for many years. He worked under 4 Madison mayors in their office. So he's well connected in Madison and in the state of Wisconsin. So we had one event on the east side of Madison, one on the west side of Madison, one in Verona. We've been in Viroqua. We've been in the Farmers Union in Wisconsin. We spoke there. And those were all book launch events. So they're about an hour and a half where we kind of explain what the book is about and gather people together. We have little exercises or activations for them to go through. But we've also been on the road doing some workshops. So the workshops are For example, we did one up in Green Bay, and they called together organizational leaders from Green Bay, Ashwaubenon, De Pere, Denmark, all the communities around Green Bay. And we did about a 4 or 5 hour workshop there where we went over the principles of the book, how you apply those, how that would work in their own organizations. You know, there was a little over 100 people, I think maybe 50 organizations there, different organizations that came and learned the principles. And so that just went over amazingly well. In fact, they started recommending us out to UW Extension, which we're going to do a workshop for UW Extension. And then there's another organization in Wausau that we'll be going to another month or so. So things have kind of started to take off, I'm happy to say, because I like to see the information in the book get out. On the other hand, it makes me more busy to have to travel to these places, especially when it's, you know, Green Bay is 3 hours away each, or at least 3 hours away each way. And so lots of activity on the road. At the Green Bay event, the organizing entity that brought us in actually said that they'd give grants to any organization that put these principles into practice. And they had to apply for the grants. And they had, I think, about 12 of the organizations that applied for the grants to put the principles in practice in their own communities and start having some community change in their own organization or through their own organization. So it's been a great success. We've been well-received everywhere we've gone so far. So I hope in Richland Center we'll be well received.
I'm sure you will. Yes, absolutely. Sir. Coming up Monday, June 9th at the Community Center. You've had the Q&A a few times. Has there been a common question that's been posed to you and Tom?
Oh, yeah. There's been a few of those kind of common questions. One is, how did we get together to do this? Because Tom is, you know, from Madison. I'm from Richland Center. We worked together, we collaborated together on various projects for about 10 years. So we were kind of in that network. We created what was called Wisconsin Partners, which is a statewide association. So leaders of various associations get together and are part of Wisconsin Partners. And then Tom and I did a lot of projects together. Tom has worked in the city, but he's a farm boy at heart. He grew up in Door County on a dairy farm. I grew up in Richland County on a dairy farm. We had some common experience in the milk strikes of the 1960s, which most people won't remember, but a few that were in that industry certainly would. It was a difficult time, and we both learned some really significant lessons that launched us into wanting to see community change in positive ways, leave things better than when we came. So one of the big questions is why Tom and I are working together. The other issue in that is that Tom is more on the liberal side of the ideological and political spectrum. I'm more on the conservative side. So people will almost always ask, how do you guys get together? It seems like, you know, left, right can never even agree on anything. They don't even want to talk to each other. They just yell at each other. So we've got a few things that we laid down as principles for ourselves, things like we won't, just because we have a disagreement, we won't leave the table, so to speak. We won't leave the conversation. We'll keep working it through. We work on things that we can work on together. We don't get involved in electoral politics. You know, that's just kind of, it kind of sours the type of work that we're trying to do. So we're trying to bring people together to find commonalities that we can work on. And if you get involved in electoral politics, it's division, not commonalities. So we try and stay away from that. But that's one of the common questions is, why are you guys working together? Or how are you working together? I can't believe you're doing this. And so they're intrigued by it. It's kind of fun to talk about that.
Well, it's proof that it can happen, that's for sure. But I think the common goal for these groups that you're appearing, I mean, whether you're left or right or wherever, everybody wants to see their community do better, right?
Okay. If you bring it down to the lowest level, here's the deal, Phil. Everybody wants their family to do well. Everybody wants their community to do well. And if you start bringing it down to that level, instead of talking about national politics or national movements or international movements. Let's just make it about what we can do ourselves.
Good to see you again, Mike.
Thank you, Phil. It's good to see you, too. Appreciate it very much.
Mike Brennan's here joining us. The book is Pulling Together, a Handbook for Community Change.
You've been listening to WRCE's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Take your favorite WRCE shows with you on the go by downloading the Civic Media app in the Apple or Google stores. For WRCE and Civic Media, I'm Bo Henry.
News from the Center, WRCE. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Plenty of Wisconsin farmers still concerned about the tone that's been set with the Make America Healthy Again Commission report. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Thursday. One of those, Doug Rebout, he is the president of the Wisconsin Soybean Association. Rebout says that with more and more consumers generationally removed from where their food comes from, education is key.
We need to show them, hey, this is what we're doing. This is the money we're investing in technology, into our equipment, to make sure we are producing a safe and, you know, affordable product. And, you know, that's the big thing right there, that affordability. We need to make sure that, you know, what we're producing on the farm, people can afford to eat. And with these studies coming out, that's going to make it tougher. That's going to raise the price of food with these studies coming out.
Doug Rebout, farmer in Janesville, also president of the Wisconsin Soybean Association, he said he is going to be watching reaction and progress from the Make America Healthy Again Commission report because he says, obviously, it could impact his farming future.
On a dairy, decisions are never made in a vacuum. Your products, technologies, protocols, they're all connected. Or at least they should be. Introducing Empowered Dairy from Merck Animal Health, the only full solution portfolio in the dairy industry. Empower is more than just powerful identification, monitoring, and biopharma tools. It's about how they work together to eliminate guesswork and solve specific problems. Learn how at m-power-dairy.com.
The Classic Green Reunion comes to Wisconsin June 12th through the 14th in West Bend. This year's event showcases Model B and industrial tractors, Waterloo Boy engines, and even drills. Come for the tractors and equipment and stay for the tours, vendors, camaraderie, and a good old-fashioned Wisconsin fish fry. To see event details or to register for tours, visit classicgreen.org. The Classic Green Reunion, June 12th through the 14th in West Bend. See you there.
And the Association of Equipment Manufacturers showing support for legislation that would establish a dairy innovation fund here in Wisconsin. The legislation would help small and medium-sized farms invest in next-generation agriculture technology that creates a zero-interest revolving loan program through the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation that would allow dairy producers to upgrade outdated equipment, adopt precision agriculture tools, and modernize manure management systems. The bill right now has been introduced by State Representative Clint Moses from Menominee and State Senator Rob Staffschult from New Richmond. That's a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Thursday. I'm PM Yonke.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Sunny this morning, becoming partly cloudy this afternoon. Our high today in the upper 70s to near 80. Tonight, mostly cloudy. We'll drop into the mid to upper 50s. Tomorrow, scattered showers or a thunderstorm with a high in the mid to upper 70s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 50.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
State Senator Kelda Royce.
The vast majority of people on Medicaid are already working, and it is Medicaid that makes it possible for them to work. People who are disabled or have chronic illnesses, and without that health care, they would be out of the workforce. They would have no ability to participate in the economy, and now they can. Medicaid is one of the greatest workforce programs this country has ever built, and they are trying to dismantle it, and with it, they're going to take people's lives and economic security.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media Radio station and on the app.
Wounded Warrior Project has been there for me since that first day in the hospital. They got me out of the house. They got me connected with other veterans, and they helped me face my PTSD. They support me and my family at every turn. And now I'm helping other warriors realize that they're not alone.
Through our hands-on programs, supportive community, and ongoing advocacy, we help post-9/11 veterans realize what's possible. Learn more at woundedwarriorproject.org/possible.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome actor Wayne York, who makes the popcorn pick of the week. And then organized crime expert Bob Dennis joins me in the studio to talk about presidents and their connections to the mob.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Here's a reminder of this hour's keyword in the Scani Summer Text to Win contest. The word is road, R-O-A-D. Text the word road through the Civic Media app and you're in the running for Brewers tickets. Club level seats, they are great seats. I've used these. You're going to want these tickets. But you're also in the drawing as well for the grand prizes, a lovely stay in Wisconsin Dells or in Door County. Details at Civic Media's website, civicmedia.us. That again, you have till the end of the hour to text road, and then you'll have more chances to win at 11 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. All right, we got a lot of ground to cover here with Congressman Mark Pocan, so let's just get right into that. Congressman, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, Pat. Thanks for having me.
You bet. We're going to have a lot to say about the Donald Trump's big bloated boondoggle in just a sec here, but you did recently visit the Dodge County Jail, and I wanted to start by asking about that because President Trump has once again chosen to impose some kind of a travel ban, which seemed very serious in the first term. In the second term, it almost seems more like a diversion from all of the, you know, the heist that's going on in Washington, D.C. But a lot of people are getting caught up in this anti-immigrant fervor, including undocumented immigrants who, you know, may or may not have committed any crimes. But we don't know because they're not getting due process. One of them was actually framed by somebody else who committed a crime. And yet he, the victim, is still in the Dodge County Jail. And what was that visit like for what is also an ICE detention facility?
Sure. Well, and you're right. The best way to be a pickpocket is to divert someone's attention. So Donald Trump, while they're picking our pockets to pay for a tax cut, a tax break for Elon Musk and himself and anyone who could afford to go to Mar-a-Lago, you know, we're floating things like, you know, travel bans, et cetera. You know, the reason we went, and it's the only ICE facility in Wisconsin that's at the Dodge County Jail to check it out, is because, one, it's part of what we need to do for our oversight responsibility as a member of Congress. But also in New Jersey, they actually are charging a member of Congress who went and did that with some criminal laws. So, you know, I think in solidarity, many of us were like saying, all right, we're, you know, ICE is just a rogue extra governmental organization right now because they don't talk to us. And, you know, we tried to reach out to them. We took the number off the website for the Milwaukee office. It's disconnected. So, you know, we can't even get a hold of someone there. We did do a tour. The county sheriff, a Republican, a partisan Republican, but was very fair. I mean, he gave us a good tour. You know, I think he didn't love that we were there, but at the same time, he was exactly what he should do. You know, he gave us a very polite, respectful tour. We saw conditions, I think, are you know, what we've seen in all the reports, they're really good conditions, and I think they run a good facility. The real problem was no one from ICE is there. About every 3 weeks they show up, other than to drop people off. And there's really no way to ask the questions we needed to ask about who's there, why they're there, what the due process rights, et cetera, are. And one of the people is a constituent of Gwen Moore's who, you know, he was framed, but at the time they didn't know. Supposedly he did a letter threatening the President Trump. But, you know, very quickly that story went south because the person's illiterate, both in English and Spanish. And this was a very well-written, very beautiful handwriting letter. Well, it turns out someone was trying to frame them to try to kick them out of the country. And they're still holding the person despite that. In fact, they supposed to have a hearing yesterday and Gwen told me they postponed it. So she's going back Friday to talk to her constituent. But, you know, it's not so much the facility that, as you might expect in Wisconsin, we do things a little better probably than other places. But it's certainly ICE, you know, the fact that then the sheriff gave me his contact number for ICE afterwards, and I called, and I've yet to get a call back, and that was Monday, today's Thursday, just shows you how they think they are above the law as an agency.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're really veering into secret police territory, police state territory, where people can be held behind bars without charges, and that nobody is accountable for this. And again, all of it to distract from the big bloated boondoggle that House Republicans passed recently, and it's over in the Senate right now. And now we're hearing from some of your Republican colleagues, Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia being one of them, saying they didn't know what was in the bill before they voted for it. And, the title of this hour's episode, by the way, is Why Can't Marjorie Read? These are folks who loved playing this game when things like the Affordable Care Act was passing or any other big bills. But it turns out they're no different. When they want to ram something through, they'll apologize later for things that they didn't know were in it, but they voted for anyway.
Yeah, and every MAGA Twitter troll that has sent a message telling me I did the exact same thing with the Affordable Care Act, I wasn't in Congress then. So, just...
There's that.
You can keep it coming, but I know reading is difficult, so we won't go there. No, this is the problem. All the committees did this overnight votes. The Rules Committee met overnight. We voted. Some people are up for a day and a half nonstop doing the bill, and literally at the crack of dawn is when we voted on the bill. After an all-night session, if you saw members, we looked even worse than we do normally, to see how tired people were. And now they're saying, oh, we didn't know what's in the bill. Well, no, of course you didn't know what's in the bill. And another member from Nebraska said he didn't know about this court's provision was in the bill. And, now we're finding out a lot of people are trying to step away from aspects of the bill. Well, I don't blame them. I mean, there's a lot of bad stuff in that bill. If I was Derek Van Orden or Brian Stile or others in Wisconsin, and I voted for a $500 billion cut to Medicare. I voted to kick off 14 million people in the country from their health care, 11 million kids and others from food assistance. I'd be as ashamed as you could imagine as well. And then they won't do a town hall to talk about it. Look, the Wisconsin smell test, the most simple thing in the world. If you're proud of something, you brag about it. You don't hide in your basement and hope no one calls. And that's exactly what every Republican in Wisconsin is doing right now.
Well, without a doubt, and as people read it, even the world's richest man looks at this and calls it an abomination and looks at the amount that's being cut. Now, I grant you, Elon Musk and Ron Johnson and others, they're unhappy with it only because it would be better balanced if they would cut even more. Yeah. Okay. But at least they're making the point that way too much of this is going on the national credit card. Again, for people who lived to talk about how much is going on the national credit card, it seems like they feel the taxpayer can afford anything as long as it's something they want on the national credit card. In this case, tax cuts for the rich.
And now this, they're trying to present a big lie to people that no one's going to lose benefits and that this won't add to the debt. We had Russ Vogt, the director of the OMB, the architect of Project 2025 in my subcommittee yesterday. And he tried to say that again, like he did on the Sunday news shows. And I said, well, the Cato Institute, a Republican-leaning group, disagrees with you. Elon Musk disagrees with you. Senator Hawley disagrees with you. Senator Collins disagrees with you. Senator Rand, disagrees with you. Who else? There are a whole bunch of the Congressional Budget Office, a nonpartisan agency. The directors appointed by Republicans disagree with you. I go, are you the only one that's right? And he's like, yep. They're just trying to put this lie out. A few people like Derek Van Orden probably fundamentally believe it. But it takes reading a little bit, and you can very quickly see if you cut funds, that kind of drastic cut, $700 billion from Medicaid, $300 billion from the Affordable Care Act, $500 billion from Medicare, people are going to lose care. And it's just common sense. And, unfortunately, the Republicans are just trying to ignore that they took this vote, and this is going to hang on them well into next year.
And by the way, all the focus has been, much of the focus has been on Medicaid and to a lesser degree SNAP and other things. But Medicare is involved in this as well, indirectly, but still, if folks who are seniors going, well, I'm on Medicare, I haven't heard them talk about that, so I guess I'm okay. You might not be.
No, because of the PAYGO rules, and I won't go deep into the weeds, it triggers sequestration, which is taking back of funds, and it will require a $500 billion cut to Medicare. They could have took care of it in their overnight sessions, but they just didn't want to pause for anything. They just wanted to get this done so that Donald Trump had it by Memorial Day. The problem is every Republican in Wisconsin in the House voted to cut a $500 billion from Medicare, and they didn't try to fix it along the way. So I would love to know who they think in Wisconsin doesn't deserve the money they've paid in all their life through their paychecks and their employers have paid in for Medicare, and now it's going to be cut. That is an unconscionable vote.
when we hear the talk about the deficits and the national debt and things like this, and I'm not looking that this will all be solved by, you know, you and Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and things like that. But when you look at the graph of how much of that debt is there because of tax giveaways to the rich, it does make people like me feel like, well, what if we just took one of those basic wealth tax ideas that we often hear from you know, the progressive side of the aisle, and how much of these debt and deficit problems could we address if we actually right-sized our tax code once again?
When you look at the skew these bills offer for the wealthiest, I think one analysis I saw, about 40%, the bottom 40% of people are going to pay more under this bill. People in the top 0.1% do really, really well. Top 1%. Really well, top 10% do well, but you know, pretty soon real people don't get it. And then they said, well, we did a tax on, they got rid of the tax on tips and on overtime and on auto loan interest and a tax cut for seniors. Well, those four that are for, I call real people, you know, add up to 5% of the bill. So 95% of the bill is pork going to Elon Musk and Donald Trump. And you know, the rest of us get a little bit. And even then, scratch the surface, and that gold is fake that Donald Trump is putting on everything in the White House. Because, for example, the tax on tips, a third of people who are tipped or wage earners don't even make enough to pay federal income taxes. And of low and moderate waged workers, tip workers are only 5% of them. So you're ignoring the vast, vast majority of working folks. And then when it comes to overtime, there's a bunch of categories where you can't qualify. You're still going to have to pay your FICA. It's only on the overtime amount, not your regular pay amount. You still got to pay tax. And there's a whole bunch of asterisks that, you know, it won't even fit on a sheet of paper. So a lot of these, oh, and they're also temporary. Unlike the corporate tax cuts or the tax cuts for the wealthy are permanent, tax cuts for us are only going to last for a few years. So, you know, this bill is the worst bill I have seen in over 30 years of being in Congress. And I can't wait to talk about it everywhere I can.
You've been in the Congress. You've been in the legislature. We talked in the last segment about the Republicans in the legislature walking away from the negotiating table with Governor Evers, and Republicans in Congress trying to ram this through in one bill because otherwise they have to follow regular order, which could subject it to the filibuster and everything else. And yet Elon Musk and some others are now saying, you know, kill the bill. But that would mean probably going through regular order. And I know I hesitate to ask anybody to make predictions, but your thoughts anyway on whether this bill does find some way to get modified, sent through the Senate and approved again by the House, or are we actually facing the prospect of, like the previous couple of years, we get to October 1st and there's still no federal budget?
That's a separate, somewhat of a separate issue from this, but yes to that question. I'm on our probes and we don't even have all the numbers, and they're asking us to start marking things up, which is ridiculous. But I think the Senate originally only had 2% of the cuts of the House. So there's a big difference between the two bills. Look, I wake up to bad choices and worse choices every single day. I'm all for bad choices. To me, a bad choice is stop the cuts to healthcare and food assistance and education funding from people. I think they're going to get their tax cut bill no matter what. There's unity on that. How they pay for it, it might just go on the national debt like the last time, which is not a good answer. But I don't want to hurt people right now. One out of three kids in Wisconsin who gets their health insurance from Medicaid, 55% of our seniors in nursing homes. I mean, those aren't the people that should have to pay for Elon Musk to be able to put more rockets into the air.
Well, like I've said, if it ends up just all going on the national credit card, they're just going to try to once again divert people in next year's election campaigns with all kinds of other mudslinging and try to get people to forget all about their pockets being picked. Congressman Mark Buchanan, as always, we appreciate the update. Thanks for what you're doing. We'll talk again real soon.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Take care. Safe travels to you. Let's pause here, and then we'll have more coming up all across the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow, live from Lake Wissota. Thanks for being part of our mornings, powered by Up North News, here on Civic Media.
Weather and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Wesley Financial Group is not a law firm.
Hi, I'm Chuck McDowell, the timeshare cancellation guy and founder of Wesley Financial Group, and I want to set the record straight. I am not an attorney. I've never wanted to be an attorney. And the truth is, I really don't even like attorneys. If I sound like an attorney or if I look like an attorney, I apologize. But what I've learned in my 15 years in the timeshare cancellation business is you don't need to be an attorney to get folks out of their timeshare. At Wesley, we've helped over 40,000 families cancel their timeshare without me being an attorney. And I want to share with you how we do it. Just give my office a call, and you will not talk to an attorney. And I guarantee if we take you as a client, we'll get you out of your timeshare, or you'll pay nothing.
Call now for your free timeshare exit info kit. 800-746-3737. 800-746-3737. 800-746-3737.
Medicare loses about $60 billion annually to fraud, errors, and abuse. June 2nd through the 8th is Medicare Fraud Prevention Week, focusing on the actions everyone can take to prevent, detect, and report Medicare fraud. Learn more by liking and following Wisconsin Senior Medicare Patrol on Facebook. Then visit our website, smpwi.org. For information and advice, remember, Wisconsin Senior Medicare Patrol.
Attention Badger fans, memories are made at Camp Randall, so bring your group and be part of the action this fall. Whether you're planning your team outing or just looking to get together with your crew, Badger football group experiences are your ticket to unforgettable moments and new traditions. Take advantage of discounts and exclusive game day experiences when you lock in your group tickets today. Visit uwbadgers.com or call 1-800-GO-BADGERS. That's uwbadgers.com or 1-800-GO-BADGERS.
Matt and Air on Air.
Congressman Mark Pocan is here. Are you planning on going out on the road again, having a couple more town halls?
Yes. No, Claire. Derek and I have been invited by Opportunity Wisconsin, so I'm really looking forward to debating Derek. My guess is it's more likely I will sprout a head full of hair than he will show up. This is important to let people know what's in this bill, because there is a very good reason why Republicans are hiding from town halls.
Catch Matt and Air on Air at its new time, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WRCE. I'm Bo Hendricks, and here's what's going on in Richland Center this morning.
It's dairy breakfast season in the state of Wisconsin. We're focusing on Richland County's event coming up Sunday, June 8th, this weekend, 7 until 1. Annette Lewis, how about a little history? Where was the first dairy breakfast held?
The first one was at Ray and Sylvia Schmidt's, and they had been to one or two. And at the time, we also had a former Allison Dairyland in the area, so she helped us, Karen Schaff. So, and it kind of started out that the Extension did it, and we met a round table like, and there was, I bet you, 25 of us at that time. And of course, none of us knew what all, how many people. And we had it on a Saturday. The first one was on the farm at Schmitz's here, and it was on a Saturday. And we were able at that time to get a lot of business owners to come out and actually serve it. So that helped a lot. But we used flat griddles. We didn't have the round griddles yet. It was a downsized menu. We didn't have the yogurt yet in the community. We didn't do cottage cheese. So it was basically pancakes, applesauce, the pork links, and curd and sliced cheeses with ice cream. So it was a modified menu at the time, and it was a Saturday. And then after that, we switched to a Sunday because we found out we could get more workers to help serve it by having it on a Sunday.
Mm-hmm. What made you step up there with all those people to be, well, I'll help coordinate that?
The people at the time.
They kind of push you into it? Or
well, what happened was we were a very active Russian County Farm Women at the time. And so Russian County Farm Women took it on. And some of it might be I was young and naive then, 44 years ago. And the other thing was I have a heart for farmers. We grew up farming, milking a stanchion barn, going to a parlor barn. My career changed. I worked with DHI Milk Testing Lab for a couple years, and then we weren't farming any longer either. So went into daycare, which has been very beneficial because I could get those kids to help come out and serve and help on the dairy breakfast. So,
oh, sure. You recruited right there.
And families. It wasn't just daycare kids. I mean, John and Cheryl McNerlin have been there probably about every year, and he's our electrician, and Cheryl does a lot of running and picking up product, and now they're bringing their grandkids the last couple of years have come to help with setup. So the breakfast has really been a family supportive event. Not only people bringing their families to the farm to see the farm, that was my mission, was to get people out on that farm, walk around, talk about it, ask questions, and actually see where your product comes from. And also, you know, a lot of the senior citizens could tell them how farming was. And they could understand that, or the value of raising healthy animals, that you produce more with healthy animals that give these wonderful diets and everything.
You still have 4-H groups and FFA people help you as well?
Oh, yes. We have 4-H groups, FFA groups, the Key Club's coming and parking cars from Richland Center. We can use any kind of group. And we also turn back and give them a donation for coming out and helping. I'm still looking for some helpers if anyone wants to come out and help. We get helpers from Shriver sends us some helpers. We get some help. Foremost has been wonderful. They, of course, send their milk to Foremost. Several of those people are, not only have they're doing all the butter this year, plus they're donating cheese cubes for the cheese trays. And several of their workers are coming in and out. And prime example, I have to tell you this. When I was doing daycare, I did daycare for James and Carrie Honer. They have 4 kids. Their oldest son is John, or we called him Johnny, and I still do. He is a supervisor at Foremost now. And he helped me, I don't know how many years, with the dairy breakfast. And what is interesting, and I've seen it again this year, these kids who I started out in elementary, middle school now, some in high school, these middle school kids know my schedule better than I do. You know, Briggs Maxwell, middle of last week, says, okay, you know, Cisco order comes in on Tuesday. We got to get it to the farm. And sure enough, I had 3 young men helping me unload and load up. They did the unloading because, like Randy said, it was 2 trucks.
I see that big supply room full of food, and it's like, they're going to eat all this?
Yeah, they will. They will.
I hope not.
Save some for you for later.
I think when Annette talks about the people, you know, the generational thing, and I mean, that's the really good thing about production egg in Richland County and the livestock. I mean, I just wrote down some notes about thanking my landlord for renting their land to us. Obviously, I said we run a lot of acres, and we own a lot, we rent a lot. And they see that value of egg production, of what livestock brings to this community. And they see that, and they believe in you, and they believe that you take good care of their land, and that's what they like to see, because they know what Annette's alluding to. When we keep these kids back in the community, we keep these jobs here, that's what this farm breakfast is about. It's about keeping the community going, and it's about keeping these jobs here in this community, because that's what really makes Richland County, I think, great. All these jobs related to egg production. I mean, that's what it's a celebration of that. This is, you know, what it's about. I mean, these people, I mean, farming's 24/7, 365, but there's a whole lot of other jobs, and you can't train people on that. They learn it. They've lived it, and they just expect that. You know, they know you don't work an 8-to-5 job. They know, you know, they know it's out there. It's real, and life is real, and it happened. Things happen, and you just go with it.
Thanks, guys.
$5 a plate.
Ooh, you can't beat that.
You've been listening to WRCE's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Take your favorite WRCE shows with you on the go by downloading the Civic Media app in the Apple or Google stores. For WRCE and Civic Media, I'm Bo.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. President Trump reviving and expanding a policy from his first administration, targeting a dozen countries with a full travel ban. It means no visitors from those countries, no temporary trips, no permanent moves. The president also placing partial travel restrictions on another 7 countries.
People from Burundi, Cuba, Laos, Sierra Leone, Togo, Turkmenistan, and Venezuela will now be unable to come to the U.S. permanently or get student or tourist visas. The White House says they're targeting countries that lack proper vetting, fail to share identity and threat information, or exhibit high visa overstay rates.
ABC's Mary Bruce. Russian airstrikes have killed 5 more people, including, Ukraine says, a 1-year-old boy, his mother and his grandmother, part of a drone attack in a northern city. Israel has recovered the bodies of 2 Israeli-American hostages taken in Hamas's October 7th attacks. Also, those U.S.-Israeli-run centers in Gaza shut down for a second day.